in Iran and Italy are very deep. Sometimes these are not very known, in particular the cultural bonds, because of political reasons. Sometimes they are not publicized just to avoid problems with partners of one country or the other. But these are very strong despite our other allies on one side of Iran and on the other side of Italy.
During the conference, Italian and Iranian academics touched on a number of cultural issues. Some drew a parallel between the influence of outstanding literary personalities such as the Italian humanist and writer Francesco Petrarca and renowned Persian poet Hafez on their respective regions of origin, while others focused on the well-established Italian-Iranian collaboration in the fields of cultural heritage and archaeology. Italy and Iran have for a long time been engaged in an archaeological touristic project in the Kermanshah province.
Our Kermanshah project, Sapienza's Kermanshah project, focuses on coupling cultural heritage development and research with sustainable tourism. So we took into consideration the whole road connecting Kasr Shirin to Kasr-Gavar, and we are studying this road as a whole and how important it was in antiquity and in the Middle Ages.
Italy and Iran also have a long history of commercial relations with economic interests playing a large role in the relations between the two countries. Max Civili, Rome.
Iranians from all walks of life took part in a rally in front of the French embassy in Tehran to protest against the French satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo and the publication of an image of the Prophet Muhammad. They also protested French President Emmanuel Macron for his support of secular laws that allow blasphemous caricatures to be published on the pretext of freedom of speech.
Just like their counterparts in other parts of the world, the protesters called for boycotting France and its products. They said governments should also condemn hate speech and discrimination against Muslims in Europe.
We are here to condemn Macron and members of his government for supporting blasphemous caricatures to be published under the pretext of freedom of expression. Such depictions are a form of hate speech and they are sacrilegious.
We are here to call for protests and boycott of French goods in response to French's stance on the offensive caricatures. God sent the Prophet Muhammad as an ambassador of peace. Macron and his cronies know nothing about Islam. They have no right to link Islam and terrorism.
It's really ridiculous that they name it freedom of speech. They should be aware that Muslims will be stronger than before and Shia and Sunni are brothers.
Iran has summoned a French diplomat to protest France's stance on the caricatures. The country's foreign ministry told the top diplomat that France is permitting hatred against Islam under the guise of support for freedom of expression. It's a sentiment also shared by the protesters here.
It's a joke that offensive pictures can be published in France under the guise of freedom of speech. This is an attempt to call for targeting Muslims in the West through the deliberate offending of their religious beliefs and values. This has to stop. It will only lead to further hostility toward Muslims.
What happened in France underscores that they are very far from the teachings of the Bible. The Holy Book called for respecting all religions. Apparently, the French president and his cabinet members are not listening.
Mass protests have been held across the Muslim world to condemn the publication of the blasphemous cartoons and Macron's anti-Islam remarks. Shops and supermarkets have removed French goods from their shelves in several countries, including Palestine, Qatar, Yemen, Kuwait, and Jordan. Calls for a boycott are also being echoed in places like Iran, Pakistan, Iraq, and Algeria. Ahmad Nodin, Tehran.
The salvo of criticism and condemnation comes on the heels of a nationwide crackdown launched by the French president on so-called radical Islam, with the promise of even tougher action following the murder of a teacher by a Chechen teenager on October 16.
As of tomorrow, at the cabinet meeting, we will dissolve the Sheikh Yassin collective directly implicated in the attack. More decisions against associations and groups of individuals will follow in the coming days and weeks. Our determination is complete. The acts will happen. The Republic needs them.
Vociferous reactions to that and his defense of Charlie Hebdo, the magazine that published insulting cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad, came from Muslims around the world in the form of protests in Syria, Turkey, Iraq, Pakistan, Bangladesh, and elsewhere.
We don't allow anyone in our country to insult our Prophet, peace be upon him. We don't have enemies in any country, but we are angry about the insult to our Prophet by the French President Macron. We don't allow it.
That, coupled with unequivocal denunciation from Muslim leaders and statesmen. Iran's Foreign Minister Javad Zarif has called Charlie Hebdo's offensive depictions of the Prophet Muhammad as an opportunistic abuse of freedom of speech that would only fuel extremism. Turkey's president has become one of a number of other leaders to call for a boycott of French products. He's also suggested his French counterpart should have his brain examined.
From here, I call on my people. Do not praise French makes. Do not purchase these makes.
Despite the growing backlash, President Macron has refused to condemn the Charlie Hebdo cartoons and has instead urged an end to calls for a boycott of French products. France is home to Europe's largest Muslim community. It's also a country that has banned support for the Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions, BDS movement, among other things, but allows the deliberate insulting of the beliefs of 1.8 billion Muslims in the name of freedom of speech. France observers say what's happening in the Western European country right now is causing more divisiveness, along with fears that what political leaders call zero tolerance for Islamic extremism will escalate into more violence.
Trump or Biden, Afghans don't care who will take power in Washington. That is because history has shown people of Afghanistan that no matter who becomes the president of the United States, their policy towards the war-ravaged country won't change. Since the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan in 2001, three presidents took office in Washington. All of them promised to end decades of fighting in Afghanistan and bring peace and security to the war-torn country. So far, none has managed to fulfill such promise.
We remember what administrations of Bush and Obama promised. Yes, to uproot terrorism and build a new Afghanistan, a place that won't be considered as a safe haven for terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda and Taliban.
I think none of U.S. presidential candidates will bring a positive change to our country. This is because they have so far proved to be only after their own interests. What we get is a constant rise of violence and misery.
Many Afghans also say that political figures in Afghanistan should abandon U.S. empty promises and find ways to build the country without foreign help.
It's better for a political elite to put an end to decades-long dependency to foreigners, mainly the U.S. The U.S. election will not positively change our lives here in Afghanistan, as Washington's priorities are in line with America's interests alone.
Nor Trump, neither Joe Biden will help Afghanistan. Dogs of the same street bark alike. During the last U.S. presidential election, when Hillary Clinton was competing with Trump, they said Trump will bring security to Afghanistan, but nothing happened.
The rise of pessimism on the outcome of the upcoming U.S. presidential election comes as Trump has already inked a peace deal with the Taliban. The U.S. president claims that the deal will pave the way for withdrawal of U.S. forces from Afghanistan.
The U.S.-Taliban peace deal proves that what Washington is doing is not for the sake of Afghans and only serves the U.S. interests. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
The United States has reported the highest number of COVID-19 cases since the disease broke out. On Friday, October 23rd, Johns Hopkins University reported nearly 83,000 new infections, surpassing all previous records. The total number of deaths has exceeded 220,000. These figures illustrated how coronavirus situation is getting worse across the nation.
The United States has 4% of the world population, yet we are representing 20% of COVID infections / deaths. Yes, big question, what is going on? There are some countries that this is not happening in, North Korea, New Zealand, Canada. The difference, the big difference here is that we have no leadership. whatsoever. And I am specifically speaking about the president who should be our leader, Donald Trump.
Estimates recently published in the specialized journal Nature Medicine by the University of Washington indicate that by February 2021, the coronavirus pandemic will have caused 500,000 deaths in the United States. The government's poor handling of the pandemic has made the situation much worse.
Right from the beginning, we had a leadership vacuum. No one was really in charge. No mask mandates. That should have been 50 states, every person got to have a mask, leave the house, you go into another building with other people, you wear a mask. There's lots of pros and cons for that, but it would stop some of the droplets from being in the atmosphere.
Although the United States is the worst hit country in terms of coronavirus infection and fatalities, and the number of victims keeps rising, Trump continues to hold campaign rallies with no consideration for social distancing rules. This comes as authorities have warned that the worst is yet to come this winter.
On Thursday, the Food and Drug Administration approved, under the Emergency Act, using the drug Remdesivir to treat COVID-19, the first and only medication so far to receive federal approval for the coronavirus. Reporting from Miami, Ronnie Corvello.
France has triggered a fierce debate about double standards against Islam and whether freedom of expression is a license to insult Islam and its nearly 2 billion followers. Last week, French President Emmanuel Macron openly backed the blasphemous cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. He took this stance after the cartoons, first published in 2015, once again emerged in public, this time by a history teacher using them to teach freedom of expression. The teacher was later killed by a young refugee of Chechen origin. Macron sparked outrage in the Muslim world by backing the teacher's move as upholding freedom of speech.
We
will defend the freedom that you taught so well and will hold secularism high. We will not give up caricatures, drawings, even if others retreat.
Macron's comments go strangely against France's lack of tolerance when it comes to any religion other than Islam. Back in 2019, a citizen was sentenced to prison for publishing a cartoon that teased backers of Holocaust as disoriented historians. On Sunday, Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan summarized things when he called on social media giant Facebook to ban Islamophobic contents, just as was the case with anti-Holocaust messages.
One cannot send a message that while hate messages against some are unacceptable, they're acceptable against others.
Iran, Turkey, Kuwait, and Jordan were among other nations condemning Macron's remarks and the continued publication of the Prophet Muhammad's blasphemous cartoons.
Muslims are the primary victims of the cult of hatred, empowered by colonial regimes and exported by their own clients, insulting 1.9 billion Muslims and their sanctities for the apparent crimes of such extremists is an opportunistic abuse of freedom of speech. It only fuels extremism.
The Jordanian Islamic Affairs Minister said insulting the Prophet Muhammad is a crime and not an issue of personal freedom. That was an echo of what Lebanon's Hezbollah and Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has said. Turkey's president also called for boycotting French products.
I'm calling on all my citizens, just like they say don't buy goods with Turkish brands in France. I'm calling to all my citizens from here to never help French brands or buy them.
Meanwhile, protests have taken place in different places, including Bangladesh and Libya. In Qatar and Kuwait, several stores have removed French goods from their shelves. Also, Kuwaiti travel agencies have suspended reservations for flights to France. Ordinary people in other Muslim countries have voiced support for the boycott campaign against France.
This is the least we can do in support of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. The French people have to respect our religion and our principles. They have freedom of speech in this regard, and we also do have the freedom of speech. They express by cartoons and we express in ceremony. Eventually, we will see who is stronger.
Macron's recent anti-Islam comments are not his first. In September, he defended reprinting of the blasphemous cartoons by French satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo, saying blasphemy is no crime.
Macron has also called Islam a religion in crisis worldwide, triggering warnings that his Islamophobic campaign could unleash attacks on Muslims and cost their lives.
This is IRIB English Radio.
Get up. Good morning.
Good morning. Your captain speaking, and we are currently cruising over Iranian skies.
گاه شهید بهشتی مسافرین گرامی خواهشمند از جهت تعیین مسیر به تابلوهای راهنما توجه فرمایید.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. How is everything?
Good morning, all.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite. Words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all, from the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord and Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger, to let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately, to help me to obey thee and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O, the Most Merciful.
The debate.
French President Emmanuel Macron has been facing growing backlash in the Islamic world over defending offensive caricatures of Prophet Muhammad and ordering a crackdown on Islam and its followers in the European country. Muslims in Asia have been holding protest rallies in recent days to vent their anger at Macron's Islamophobic statements, calling for a boycott of French products and an apology from Macron. This is while France has just raised the country's security alert to the highest level after a knife attack in the city of Nice, which killed at least three people. Iran's foreign minister has condemned the knife attack, saying the escalating vicious cycle of hate speech, provocations, and violence must be replaced by reason. Mohammad Javad Zarif added, the world must recognize that radicalism only breeds more radicalism, and peace cannot be achieved with ugly provocations.
Leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, slams French President Emmanuel Macron for his anti-Islam stance and support for the publication of blasphemous cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. Young French people, ask your president why he supports insulting God's messenger in the name of freedom of expression. Does freedom of expression mean insulting especially a sacred personage? Isn't this stupid act an insult to the reason of the people who elected him? The leader also slammed the double standards regarding freedom of expression in France, where even questioning the Holocaust as a criminal act. The next question to ask is, why is it a crime to raise doubts about the Holocaust? Why should anyone who writes about such doubts be imprisoned while insulting the Prophet is allowed? Back in 2019, a French citizen was sentenced to prison for publishing a cartoon that teased backers of Holocaust as disoriented historians. Iran's President Hassan Rouhani also slammed Macron's support for the sacrilegious cartoons, warning that disrespectful remarks would instigate violence.
Disrespecting a prophet is not right. It's against morality and it instigates violence. It's not right to provoke the sentiments of billions of people across the globe, from Muslims to non-Muslims. It's surprising that those who claim to be advocating democracy incite violence and bloodshed somehow, even unknowingly.
Earlier this month, Macron supported what he called the right to show satirical cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. He took the stance after the cartoons, first published in 2015 and again republished in early September, once again were publicized after a history teacher used them in its class. The teacher was later killed by a young refugee of Chechen origin. Later on, sacrilegious cartoons of the Prophet were projected onto government buildings as a tribute to the slain teacher. Many Muslim leaders and groups have since slammed France, saying freedom of expression doesn't give it a license to insult Islam and its nearly 2 billion followers. Millions of Muslims in different countries have also held rallies against France's support for the cartoons. Massive protests were held in Yemen, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. people in Iraq and Libya, as well as Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip and occupied West Bank, have also held rallies to decry France. Calls are also growing for boycott of French products. Supermarkets have removed French goods from their shelves in several countries, including Yemen, Kuwait, and Jordan. France's lack of respect for Muslim values is also an affront to a big portion of its own citizens. After all, the country is almost 6 million Muslims, the largest in the Western world.
Joining us on debate, we have political analyst Karim Sharara joining us from the Lebanese capital, Beirut, also journalist and historian Brett Yonkers is joining us from Hasselt. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Sharara in the Lebanese capital. What are the reasons, the main reasons, in your opinion, behind Macron's anti-Islam stances?
Well, it would be easy to say that, that France is anti-Muslim. It would be very reductionist of us also to say so. This really doesn't quite sum things up. I believe if you want to take a deeper look into things, you have to go back into France's post-World War II practices and its historical view of itself. Because, well, as you know, as it's clear, Western Europe has its roots in Christendom it's rooted in Christianity, so its experience is rooted in the historical experience of Christianity. So when a European looks at himself, of course, he doesn't look at himself as someone who has experience rooted in Islam, as someone in Algeria, for example. So this goes back to how Europeans view themselves in the first place. So when you go back to France's post-World War II practices and how they were adamant on bringing people in from the Arab world, and you had this huge influx of immigrants into France in order to support French industry and whatnot. It helps solve a short-term problem, but in the long term, you also have to take into consideration how France had been dealing with Algeria, France's colonialist past. So this image of the white man as being a savior, which they had been propagating in their previous colonies, had still been taking root in society. So the practices and their views towards the Muslims that had been coming into France at the time, the clashes go back to then, because you have this huge influx of immigrants coming into France, and I believe that the French policies at the time were quick to dismiss their views as being external, and saying that, well, if you want to be part of this society, then you have to accept our historical heritage as it is and get rid of your own baggage. And this is where the problems start. This is where Islamophobia is rooted in France.
Brett Yonkers, I'd like to get your thoughts on what our guest in Beirut just said. Also, if you may, tell us why should the likes of Western leaders like Macron take such stances against Islam and Muslims?
Well, I think, partially has already been said, and I think it's also important to mention the French basic concept, the core concept of laïcité, which means a sort of radically continued secularism that is considered to be of extreme importance to the foundations of the French Republic. And this goes back to centuries, or at least decades, of conflict between what at the time was considered the supporters of the old feudal establishment, which was unfortunately supported by a big part of the leadership of the Catholic Church in France at that time, and the more liberal, progressive-minded revolutionaries that ever were at the helm of the French Revolution in 1789, and then subsequent revolutions in 1830, 1848, and 1870 again. So when you see this conflict, eventually France tried to develop a form of very radically empowered secularism, which was, I believe, cemented into law in 1905, that established France as a very secular nation. Now, that by itself is not necessarily a problem. I mean, there are secular nations all over the world, including in the Islamic world, like the Syrian Arab Republic, for example. But the problem that you see nowadays, for the past few decades, is that this laïcité has been corrupted into an idea that any form of public expression of religion is considered a problem for your French citizenship and your French nationhood, and being part of the French nation itself. And this has been propagated and promoted by extremist right-wing groups, such as the Front National, which is now has rebranded themselves as the Rassemblement National, led by Marine Le Pen, who is one of the major contestants for the leadership of France, and was only narrowly defeated by Macron in the presidential election. And this has now started to take root as a very Islamophobic, anti-Muslim sentiment, in which they believe that a person who is religiously Muslim, who is offended, for example, indeed, if you offend the Prophet, who is offended if you offend Islam as a religion, this is considered by some, by many, and a growing number of people in France, as a testimony that you are not compatible with French culture and with French society. And this is a problem that has been growing more and more, and the fact that the right-wing extremist groups have been growing in power has kind of put Macron into such a position in which he is now considering really fishing out of the same pond, so to say. He tries to attract these extremist voters to his cause, to his more what was considered a center right-wing or even a centrist position so far, and he's trying to attract these voters to him in order by playing the Islamophobia card and by playing this idea that extreme secularism has to be enforced on everyone, whether they are public officials or not, and has to be enforced particularly on Muslims in France.
Karim Shahar, Iran's foreign minister, condemned the recent knife attack in France. Mohammad Javad Zarif said the world must recognize that radicalism only breeds more radicalism, and peace cannot be achieved with ugly provocations. Give us your thoughts on the recent comments from the Iranian foreign minister, and who do you think benefits, actually, from such violence and provocations?
Okay, well, I think Mr. Zarif put it quite clearly when he said this is a form of hate speech. This is a form of, you're only breeding more violence. Because, look, and as Ayatollah Khamenei said, when you're dealing with a Holocaust denier, well, it'll be easy to throw them in jail and say that they're being anti-Semitic. When you're dealing with a person of color, it'll be easy to say, for example, to a black man, the N-word, and, well, you'd be racist then. And you'd be also fined and put in jail for this. But when you're talking about Muslims, it'll be easy to insult them and hide behind the banner of free speech. Well, no, this isn't free speech. This is hate speech. But it's become such an established practice in France that Islamophobia is beginning to take root deeply in French culture at the moment. And this goes back years, as I said earlier. And as for who's benefiting from all this, it's like I said, when France is one of the most racist countries vis-a-vis Muslims in the Western world, and in Europe, in fact. I think it's only seconded by... Well, I'm not sure. I forgot the data. In any case, France is probably the most anti-Muslim country in Europe at the moment. So, culturally speaking, when you want to secure your own base at home, and you're dealing against Turkey and its form of extremism and the way it's been dealing with Syria over the past few years, ever since the beginning of the Syrian war, and you're trying to distance yourself from Turkey's practices and limit Turkish interference in your own country, well, then you the easiest thing would be to alienate Muslims projecting the idea that Muslims are the other in France and their cultural heritage is not welcome. So this doesn't just come out of the blue. This also comes as France's attempt to limit Turkish interference in the Western world, and as part of France's geopolitical conflict with other countries in the Middle East.
Precht Yonkers, to what extent are Western countries, including France, responsible for the issue of radicalism and instigation of radicalism in the Middle East following years of wars, aggressions, occupations in countries like Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria? The list just goes on. It's Yemen, Libya, and of course the occupied Palestinian territories as well.
This is indeed what I believe to be one of the most crucial and one of the most essential points to bring up. And it's not just a matter of blowback, as it is called. A lot of people, a lot of well-meaning people in the West often say that these attacks are quite simply just a response by Muslims who are angered by years of attacks perpetrated by the West against the Muslim world. Which, of course, they're not mean as a justification, but more as an explanation. But I think that goes a little bit, it oversimplifies matters a little bit. Because when you see people like the Chechen student who murdered his teacher, and most likely, I have not read, I don't know if they specifically mentioned the identity and the reasons behind the recent attacks in Nice, but I would definitely, if I were a betting man, I would bet a lot that the attacker, again, is a Wahhabi Takfiri terrorist. These are not people who really attack France out of the fact that they consider France to be an enemy of the Muslim world, because France has never attacked a Wahhabi power or a Wahhabi movement in their history. Same goes for the UK and the United States. On the contrary, of course, France has always been supporting these movements. For example, look at the fact that France was at the absolute forefront in 2011 in invading Libya, destroying the Jamahiriya government that existed there and replacing it with this hellish state that exists there now, in which open air slave markets are being held by Wahhabi terrorist organizations that are empowered there now. France has been on the forefront of supporting and arming and funding Wahhabi terrorist groups in Syria. They have been helping Saudi Arabia in destroying the nation of Yemen. They are hopping on the bandwagon regarding the isolation, not so much anymore, but in the past, the isolation against the Islamic Republic of Iran. So this is not so much a simple issue of blowback. In fact, I think what is happening is this is a matter of, I believe it was President Assad of Syria who actually said it. It's a matter of you breed scorpions to attack someone else, and in the end you grow so accustomed to them that you put the scorpion in your pocket and forget that after a while the scorpion will most likely sting you as well. I think this is basically what is going on. These people are not concerned, these Chechen terrorists, for example, they are not concerned with the fate of the Islamic world, because these people are Wahhabis. They are supported and funded by Saudi Arabia. They have actually been benefiting a lot from Western imperialism. But right. If you keep funding these radical extremist groups and keep pitting them against the Islamic world, sooner or later there will be someone going rogue. And I think that's what's happening here. So, at a certain point, one or two of these extremist terrorists that are walking around in France and have been seeing all this this terror attack happen with the support of France, well, one or two of them will suddenly think, yeah, but why are we not attacking, you know, people insulting Islam over here? And I think that's what's happening here. One of these people went rogue, same thing as what happened with Charlie Hebdo with the attacks there. These are people who suddenly decide that it indeed is quite hypocritical that they do not practice any of their bloodthirsty tactics against the West itself, and this is what they're doing now. The French have been stung by scorpions that they have been breeding themselves.
Karim Sharara in Beirut. Emmanuel Macron recently said that France will never renounce caricatures defending that specific teacher for promoting freedom and backing freedom of expression. That is quite inconsistent, in my opinion, for France. We have to recall the French comedian Dodonné, who was he was shunned and taken to court a number of times for alleged racist remarks and inciting anti-Semitism in his shows. What do you have to say about that?
Well, it's like I said earlier, you can't hide behind the banner of free speech when it comes to the Jewish community, or when it comes to black people, when it comes to any other ethnicity. But when you're talking about Arabs or Muslims, well, it's easy to do that because, well, they have no one to no powerful country that would lobby for them or that would threaten French interests. I mean, the only thing that I think at the moment would stand any chance of having Macron change his opinion would be Islamic Unity at the moment,
vis-a-vis the French and French products. So this boycott might actually work if Islamic countries can actually pull together to say this, to do this. But it's highly doubtful that they would do this because they've been more in league with Macron and French and Western imperialism than they've been with one another. It would really be a wonder to see Saudi Arabia and GCC countries coming together, facing the French in an economic war, for example. I don't think that's going to happen. The only thing I think that would happen is what Mr. Zarif said, that you're only breeding more violence in your own country, and you're only going to succeed in alienating your very own your own populace. I mean, and when you push people to the brink, and when you force them to believe that they do not belong in their very own country, they're going to commit violence. They're going to commit destabilizing acts. And I mean, long term, this isn't going to be in the interest of France.
Sure.
He might reap short term benefits. He might be able to, as I imagine he's trying to do, secure his share of Marine Le Pen's voters. But,
okay.
And he's trying to be, he's tried to appeal to some of them before, and this is the only thing he's going to succeed at doing. But long term, this is going to be a destabilizing act in France, unless French legislature can put an end to this and appease its Muslim population.
Brecht Yonkers, final thoughts. From you, staying with the issue of hypocrisy of French freedom of speech, criticism of Israel is immediately labeled as anti-Semitism. Even discussions on the Holocaust are met with fierce opposition. Cap the program off for us with your final comments.
Yes, I think that is a very good point. It's not just the comedian Dieudonné, but also Alain Sauval, for example, who is a Western politician who was very prolific. First in the communist movement, later on in more extreme right-wing circles. And he was a rising star, let's say, in the right-wing politics in France when he joined the Front National, the right-wing party. But at a certain point, he left and he decided to question the point of the French politics that claimed that Muslims were the problem. And at a certain point, he started saying that not Muslims, but Jews are the central problem, one of the big problems facing France. Now, whether or not you agree with that, I personally don't agree with the fact that he said that. But the interesting thing is just by the fact that he changed his appeal from what the Front National said, Muslims are the problem, he said, no, the Jews are the problem. Suddenly, he was faced with judicial charges and ended up, I believe, even going to jail for a short period of time. So, and he is still considered a very disgraced politician. He is considered a neo-Nazi and God knows what, because of the fact that he decided to question the typical line of the dichotomy that the West wants him to believe and started questioning the influence of Israel. And this is, I think, a very clear example of the hypocrisy that we see now in France and in many parts of Europe.
We're fresh out of time for tonight's show. Allow me to thank my guest, political analyst Karim Sharara, joining us from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Thank you to journalist and historian Brecht Yonkers joining us from Hasselt. And also special thanks to you for joining us on this show. Bye, everybody.
This is IRIB English Radio. website is www.parstoday.com/en.
Unity Week. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and welcome to the second part of the special series on the Unity Week that spans the 12th till 17th of the Islamic month of Rabiul Awwal, to mark the anniversary of the Messenger of Mercy, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Hope we will be true followers of him to meet him in paradise. The Noble Quran is the best source to describe the Prophet. Stay tuned, please. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, has such a high position that God never calls him by name directly. Whenever God wants to address him directly, he uses the phrases meaning, O Prophet, O Messenger. But this is not the case for other divine messengers, as God addresses them with their names. In addition, God orders the faithful to fully respect the Prophet. In Ayah 63 of Surah Nur, for instance, he says that the faithful should never call the Prophet in the way they call one another. They must rather address him quite respectfully. God has used the name Muhammad 4 times in the Noble Quran, but in all these cases, the Prophet is addressed indirectly as the third person. The name Muhammad means the praised. This comes from the fact that the entire life and characteristics of the Prophet was praised and beautiful. In Ayah 4 of Surah Qalam, God says that the Prophet possesses great morals. In Ayah 21 of Surah Ahzab, we read, "Certainly you have in the Prophet of God an excellent exemplar for him who seeks God and the hereafter and remembers God much. For sure, an exemplar is the one whose every little behavior should be taken as model. Anas ibn Malik narrates, was the Prophet's servant for 10 years. His behavior was in a way that I didn't understand if I was his servant or he was mine. According to the Noble Quran, the most conspicuous characteristic of the Prophet was his kindness and affection. This very merit absorbed many hearts to him and guided them to the right path. God says in Ayah 159 of Surah Al Imran, "Thus it is due to mercy from God that you are lenient with them. And had you been rough, hard-hearted, they would have certainly dispersed from around you." In Ayah 128 of Surah Tawbah, God says that the Prophet cannot tolerate hardships of the faithful. He says, "Certainly a messenger has come to you from among yourselves. Grievous to him is your falling into distress. Excessively eager about you, to the faithful he is kind and merciful." This comes while God describes other messengers as brother to the people. In Ayah 73 of Surah A'raf, Prophet Saleh is called the brother of his people. In Ayah 50 of Surah Hud 2, we read that God sent to the people of Ad their brother Hud as prophet. Also in Ayah 106 of Surah Shu'ara, God says, "When their brother Nuh told them, 'Will you not be pious?'" Another characteristic of the Prophet of Islam is that his name had been mentioned in the books of the previous prophets. For instance, in Ayah 157 of Surah A'raf, God says, "Those who follow the Prophet Messenger, the unlettered, whom they find written down with them in the Torah and Evangel, who enjoins them good and forbids them evil." Moreover, in Ayah 146 of Surah Baqarah, it is stressed that the clerics of the people of the book, including Jews and Christians, knew the Prophet of Islam well like their children, as they had read about him in their books. It says, "Those whom we have given the book recognize him as they recognize their sons." These ayahs expose the fact that the physical and moral features of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, had been mentioned clearly in the scriptures of the previous messengers. The Prophet of Islam is the greatest creature and enjoys the highest status among the creatures of God. Yet, he is the servant of God. This is a fact that Muslims testify every day in their ritual prayers. For sure, such a high-ranking servant had very heavy responsibility. That's why God ordered him from the very beginning of his mission to perform midnight prayer as a means to get the power for shouldering the responsibility. This shows that the heavier our responsibility, the more we need to be in communion with God. Ayah 79 of Surah reads, "And during part of the night, pray the midnight prayer as a gift for you. Soon your Lord will raise you to a praised position." In this ayah, God emphasizes that the midnight prayer is obligatory for the Prophet so that he will be granted a position in the hereafter which will be praised by all.
Good morning! Good morning.
Good morning.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.